Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
What do we talk about and what don't we talk about? Yesterday we spoke with Rabbi Doron Perez and he said to us, please excuse the fact that I'm in my car. We are going to a presentation of the findings of the IDF, what happened on their son Daniel Perez's base when Daniel was murdered. And I said to him, is this helpful or is it more traumatizing? And he said, in truth, both. But they needed to hear it. It was obviously their choice to go, but they were releasing this information to the families of those who had lost family on that day. How much should be known? What should be protected in terms of country security? And what does the law say about this? Dr. Tal Mimran is an associate professor at the Tzfat Academic College, the Academy Coordinator of the International Law Forum of Hebrew University. A very, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us once again. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Great to be with you.
It's wonderful to chat to you. So it's obviously a difficult one because in many ways, in every way, the government and the IDF owe the citizens of Israel an explanation as to what went wrong. So that's the first thing. And there's obviously they're entitled to a certain amount of information, but it needs to be balanced with the country's security. How does this work?
So when it comes to investigations of what happened in October 7 and surrounding the event, I think we have three layers of investigation. The first one is the operational level, namely investigation to improve performances of the IDF in the future. The second one is an investigation to determine should there be any accountability of either a military commander or a political figure. And the third level is that of a criminal investigation, because there are some criminal investigation both of Israeli and non-Israeli citizens. Now, you are absolutely right. We are in an intersection which mixes several interests at the same time. Mm-hmm. And we are still in the midst of hostilities. The war is not over yet. So a public presentation of some of the mistakes, errors made by the IDF might inhibit on the ability of the IDF to conduct the war as we speak. So that's one consideration. Another consideration is, of course, the privacy and the autonomy of the people involved. We tend to compare October 7 to the Yom Kippur War in terms of the trauma, both in extent and in quality. But this was a completely different time without internet, without social media. And we had people that were injured and captured during the Yom Kippur War that later got back to society and lived a lifetime without telling their story. Now the story of the victim is out there. It's on social media.
Right.
It's part of the publications of Israel in terms of its diplomatic efforts to attract legitimacy. And while war is a national event, without a doubt, the toll, the cost, at the end of the day, is an individual one. So we have economic harm, we have physical harm, we have mental harm, and we also have the issue of privacy of the victims.
Right.
And in Israel, it seems that since October 7, we completely forgot about this aspect,
right,
or this issue.
What was interesting is from the outset, because of even though Hamas had filmed what they were doing, there was this denial. And the minute that happened, the tendency is, well, let me show you. But of course, that's when the question started to be asked, what should we be showing? Should we be degrading the victims and the families and traumatizing the families by putting that out there? And, you know, did Israel get this right?
So I think that in terms of Hamas, as always, it is playing a double role. On the one hand, they documented the atrocities, But their audience was not the international community. The audience of Hamas was first and foremost Palestinians, which they wanted to mobilize and incite to join the party. Apologies for the term.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, Hamas is not interested in showing to the world, to the international community, to the United Nations, international organizations. It is not interested in showing the level of cruelty that it deployed on October 7. So Hamas is playing a double game. And when it comes to Israel, I think, sadly, it seems like we don't have a clear strategy on the issue. Because in some examples, you can find unknowns, which we are still waiting to discover. But in other aspects, we have very clear graphic images of what went down. And it seems like there is some inconsistency in the way that we are dealing with the situation. And I think that it happens first and foremost because we are in a dual situation. Mm. We have an army spokesperson with certain interests, and we have a government the government interest on the other side. And I think that the desires and the needs of those two different branches of the Israeli state apparatus are in collision.
Feels that way, because whereas the army is taking full responsibility, it would seem, I'm not sure that we're seeing it from the government at
absolutely.
All.
Absolutely. No, the politicians are not interested in taking responsibility at the moment. I think that they are, they adopted the view that their responsibility will be determined in elections. But this is, of course, a bogus claim. This is not connected to reality. And this does not meet the standard that we were accustomed to in Israel as a democratic society. We saw political figures resigning, stepping down, in minor cases, ones which don't even resemble the situation that we are in currently. And it seems that it is part of a broader trend and that we are living through this day and age. The shame is lost. People don't feel embarrassed by mistakes. They take the mistake as a step in the letter. So the mistake has become part of the success story rather than a moment of reckoning. So I think that we as a society are going through a very dangerous process, one that we take away from ourselves any guilt, and we try to embrace an empowering story. So even my downfall is just another step in my success story.
That's
and
so
people don't want to let go of their own brand, their own image or public figure, they want to present.
The other aspect that I would imagine makes it more complicated is the individual preference. We've seen with the Bibas family the need, it's almost a desperate need for privacy. And they're trying to acknowledge everybody. They're trying to appreciate the support. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you can almost feel this need just to allow them the space to breathe.
Yeah, there is really significant social pressure in this regard. Hostages that were taken and returned are required as part of social pressure to join the lines of the battle for the release of all of the hostages. Instead of allowing people to recover from the trauma, they are inserted into the political turmoil in which we are in. And I think that the Bibas family or other victims are not really able to make an autonomous decision, because you have social pressure from the side of the families of hostages and victims. And from the other side, you have a more broader social pressure to demonstrate what was done to us, to show that we shall overcome, and etc. So I really feel bad for the people in that situation, because they have just went through the worst possible scenario one can imagine, and instead of allowing them some space, some autonomy, some time to recover, they are required, they are demanded to play public role, which they did not ask for.
Absolutely. And they're real people with real relationships. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday.
So no one asked itself, how will Noah Arghamani feel in a few years?
Exactly.
Knowing that...
Yeah, it's and you know, there were people. I had that experience when I was reading the book The Choice about the Holocaust, and it was just the most stupid thing that I didn't realize was for me, Holocaust victims were always came from these perfect families, and then they were Holocaust victims. And in a way, they were depersonalized because. You suddenly saw that there were real people, and some had good marriages and bad marriages and good relationships with their parents and children and bad relationships, and there were all sorts. And I think the danger here is exactly the same thing, that not everybody who's a victim is able to actually conduct an interview, is comfortable with being in public.
Exactly.
It came
some
from a perfect, happy family.
Alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people just want to live their lives, and it's more than acceptable.
Yes. So it becomes very difficult. Before I let you go, can I just, and I've just told them I just need a few more minutes with you. I hope you've got a few more minutes, because I want to try and understand what happens now. So they've released the IDF portion, or certain parts of it that they can. What are the next steps in this inquiry?
So sadly, we don't have a clear path of the upcoming steps, because in a regular situation, we would have established either a political or a professional commission of inquiry that would have looked into the situation. But currently, there is a political... an impossible political situation that can allow us to move forward. And in fact, we might find ourselves in a situation in which all we have are the investigations of the IDF. And this is definitely not enough, because investigations of the IDF focus on the operational level. How could we have functioned better in the face of the threat? How could we have understood better the threat? How could we have responded better to the threat once it crystallized and knocked on our doorstep and entered our territory? But we will not have the answers to the real questions that we want to know. Who is the responsible for the failure? What steps should be taken in relation to that responsibility? Are we talking about the need to step down from office? Are we talking about maybe criminal proceedings of people involved? And we are in a feeling that we might never get an answer. So we are seeing the JFK mystery unfolding before our eyes. So we might have to wait 50 years for a prime minister or a president that will allow to open up all of the files. Because currently the political situation creates a sense in which we will have some very significant secrets within our society, and we will never know the truth, because the truth is tainted by the political turmoil in which we are found.
It's very, very interesting and very concerning. Do you think there will be a judicial inquiry at some point?
I doubt it. In this existing government, I highly doubt it. The best possibility is that in 2026, after the elections, you will have a broad a government of unity, which will involve the main parties from the right and from the left, and then maybe you will have some chance of promoting such a step. But otherwise, I really don't see it. We are a very, very polarized society, just like most of the world. You can see it in the US, you can see it in South America, in Europe. We are all suffering from the same trend. In this regard, social trend.
Yep, and it'll be fascinating to see how this plays out. Dr. Tal Imran, who is an associate professor at the Tzfat Academic College and academic coordinator of the International Law Forum of the Hebrew University. Thank you, as always. It is 8:51.